I have a question for you, a more intimate question than I would normally permit myself, a little awkward and uncomfortable, in fact, but one which has tugged at my mind all week, as it does in this very moment, and perhaps something useful might come of your willingness to make your own private answer. The question is, why did you come? What did you hope might happen today? What is the meaning to you of this particular Sunday? It's a logical question because some of you who do not come very often have made a special effort to be present this morning. And even those of you who can truthfully say, I came because I always come, even you can hardly have escaped some sort of special feeling. I suppose one answer would be that there is a ceremonial reason for coming. I mean, after all, this is Easter, and even if you don't go to church any other time, you go on Easter. You would not feel right, you tell yourself, to miss it. Besides, there is more excitement today than on the ordinary Sunday. More people, for one thing, scrubbed and dressed with a little extra care. And the music is different. The choir has expanded a little, sings with more than the usual joy and power, and the triumphant brass almost lifts you out of your seat. As a lady from another church told me last night, you go to hear the music. I had a halfway kind of promise from our choir director last year that he would do a totally musical Easter this time. But sometime during the cold of winter, his heart froze on him. Maybe next year. And more quietly, but nonetheless lovely, the lilies and the azaleas relieve the starkness of the cross. And it's a touching exercise to read the names, as I did earlier this morning, of those who give a flower on Easter, in memory of someone who once gave that person a reason to live. And if all else fails, there is that small, mild wonder at how the speaker will respond to the challenge of finding some new way to handle a holy day which does not allow much change. Or you may be tempted to answer my question about why you came theologically. But the answers will not all be the same. All over the country this morning, people like us will stand in all kinds of churches to sing the stirring hymn, Christ the Lord is risen today. But you don't have to know very much about religion to know that their interpretation of those words will not be alike. Some of them will think about a purely physical event, an empty tomb, a tale of messengers dressed in white, a group of frightened women, a handful of dispirited men whose first impulse is to doubt the whole thing, and then finally a church built on the premise that somehow death has been conquered. If for these believers there should show up in logic or in the text itself some intellectual difficulty with the story, they would choose not to be troubled. But standing beside them in most churches, and certainly in this one, will be those who watch the pageantry and hear the great affirmations and who celebrate the Easter story in their own way as a statement that no grave could ever hold captive the kind of love He liberated into the world. That His life and His message are ultimately indestructible. And that therefore this is the day of all days to promise the new beginnings and the new hopes without which we are simply not able to go on living. I can't pretend to know exactly what this day means for any one of you, but it is a comfort to know what it means for myself. And that can be summed up, in part at least, by something that happened 2 or 3 weeks ago when I was raking leaves, all soggy and dark, the leaves that is, with the wet and cold of winter, and discovered rising up beneath them the pale green shoots of crocuses and daffodils. There was frost still, and they seemed to me in their defiance and vulnerability like small green flags of optimism. Nature's way of writing the word hope. For many of us, Easter is religion's way of writing it in capital letters. Because far down beneath whatever conflicting answers we may have for why we came this morning, there is in all of us ultimately the same response. We came to celebrate hope. The hope that starting over and beginning again are part of God's eternal promise. And it's easier to do that right now than in any other time of the year, because this is the season of promise, the first unmistakable announcement that summer's green and busy life is on its way back. Put religion aside for a moment and consider what the magic of spring by itself has meant to humanity. One day, last week, sitting at the desk, I made myself remember the humanity of an ancient time, cave-bound, cabin-weary, tired of cold and gray skies, sick of winter, and how many times a man and a woman must have said it to each other, if we can just make it until spring. And so that becomes the metaphor by which we sustain ourselves. In our sickness of mind or body, in our loneliness, in our despair, if we can just make it till spring, until some miracle of grace can break through so that doubt can change to hope, so that what seemed dead can be resurrected. The thing to remember is that all things make sense by contrast. Every season, every mood has meaning because of its opposite. Spring is a burst of music because winter gets to be so dull and prosaic. Hope is a cherished gift because we have known despair. Life itself is priceless only because death frames the value of it. Someone created a legend once about a time before human beings knew death, when life, without the knowledge that it could end, had grown selfish and insensitive. People had no sorrow So nothing came along to break and soften the heart. There were no endings, no goodbyes. Every day was like every other day, until here and there a change came called death. And first one and then another laid down the tools of daily work and never took them up again. A woman was called away to leave an empty place that had been tender and full of grace. A child fell asleep, and too soon the games and laughter, even the fussing, had stopped. What happened then, according to the legend, was that love, which had come to be taken for granted, grew sharp and poignant again, marked by a new depth and tenderness. The consciousness, after all, that we do not have each other forever is what gives intensity to our loving. The legend says, we were given a grave to keep us from becoming clods. Beyond all doubt, it works that way. There is a difference between those who have lost someone or who have felt the breath of death brush their own cheeks and those who have never yet been troubled by either. Here are the words of a man who learned how life becomes truly priceless. For me, death, now that it has become imminent, has changed life. I have no time to spend on disliking people, on being bored or ill-tempered or shy. Every action assumes significance because it may be by that action that I am remembered. And all the trivial things, the dull duties, the mechanical tasks are priceless. I love them. All things make sense by contrast, which means that our celebration of hope this morning will strike only so deeply into each one of us as despair has struck. If there has been no winter of discontent, no death of confidence or trust, then the promise of new hope, new life, will be lovely rhetoric, but it will not shake or change us much. Thoreau summed it up, only that day dawns to which we are awake. Which is to say, on one level, that this time of year, this resurrection called spring, really happens only to those who walk out in wonder to touch the swollen illogic of buds and to marvel at the presumption of all tender green stuff that means to grow in the place of what was dead. But we have sometimes missed spring because we were too busy to do these innocent, simple things. Only that day dawns to which we are awake. And on a higher level, those words mean that Easter only speaks the promise of new life if, having come here with the cold hand of failure laid heavily on our spirits, we are willing to believe in starting over. All creeds come down at last to the single man or woman. And if we believe, we do so because we see the miracle happen to someone. or because it happens to us. I could easily see the first miracles of natural life this morning as I drove to church. The gum tree buds as thick and fat as my thumb. The elm tree tops full of light green lace. The jonquils imitating ahead of time the full gold of summer. I could see that. What I cannot see is what this day might mean to someone who came to this room expectantly, or, greater miracle yet, to someone who came routinely and was taken captive unaware by new hope. One last set of contrasts between the words we use and the words of faith written in the Bible. A way of summing up the promise of this day. Our word goes like this. I have tried many times before and failed to conquer my own pettiness, the shamefully small circle of my love. Maybe if I were younger. And the other word says, on the lips of a man named Paul, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We say, our word is, it sounds good, I suppose, but I've reached a dead end in my life. I don't know where else to turn. And the other word says, behold, I have set before you an open door. This Easter morning, beloved guests, invite you to believe that you can walk through it. The rest is up to you.